Under the guise of protecting the environment, it's set to unleash a wave of damaging new regulations that will wash over and further submerge our struggling economy.
Senator Murkowski moves to restrict EPA authority. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 21st of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, new underwater mapping tools aid in staking deep sea territory.
What everybody is doing, every nation is truly following the rule of law, which says you go out and you map, and that's how you build up your criteria for an extended continental shelf.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news.
Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced legislation today to overturn the Environmental Protection Agency's finding that greenhouse gases are a danger to public health. Her move was immediately condemned by conservationists, Democrats on the Senate Environment Committee, and the EPA itself. APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington.
Senator Murkowski has filed a rarely used resolution of disapproval to fight the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA says greenhouse gases are a health danger, so can be regulated under the Clean Air Act. But Murkowski said Thursday on the Senate floor that the agency's finding will impose backdoor regulations.
It's not merely a finding. It's actually a floodgate. And under the guise of protecting the environment, it's set to unleash a wave of damaging new regulations that will wash over and further submerge our struggling economy.
Murkowski painted a scenario in which unrealistic pollution restrictions could affect power plants, large hotels, hospitals, mines, and fish processors.
Businesses will be forced to cut jobs, if not move outside our borders or close their doors for good, perhaps. Domestic energy production will be severely restricted, increasing our dependence on foreign suppliers and threatening our national security. Housing will become less affordable, consumer goods more expensive, as the impacts of the EPA's regulations are felt in the towns and the cities and on farms all across America.
The senator called the EPA's regulations a blunt tool that could hit Alaska especially hard.
The continued operation of existing businesses and future endeavors alike, including Alaska's three refineries that we have, the Trans-Alaska pipeline system, we call it TAPS, and the proposed Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline, will all be jeopardized.
But California Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer says nonsense. She chairs the Environment Committee and says they've been assured the EPA won't shut down businesses across the country.
As a matter of fact, they've told us informally they're going after only the largest of the polluters, and they are not moving quickly. They're really now working on how the best way is to do their job.
Boxer says if Murkowski wants to make sure the EPA isn't overreaching, she could tailor her legislation to say so, rather than trying to completely reverse the agency.
She doesn't have an amendment or a resolution that says, let's make sure the EPA goes slowly on enforcing the Clean Air Act as it relates to carbon. If she did that, we have letters and documents from EPA saying they're not rushing at all. So no, I don't think that's the issue at all. I think it's a smokescreen.
A smokescreen, Boxer says, for big business trying to shirk cleaning up its act. Boxer says Murkowski's resolution disputes scientific conclusions that come from both the Obama and the conservative Bush administrations.
Today, an assault on the health of the American people was begun with the announcement that Senator Murkowski will try, for the first time in history, to overturn a scientific finding that clearly calls carbon pollution a danger to the health of our families.
Boxer led Democrats on the Environment Committee in a press conference Thursday. Maryland Senator Ben Cardin boiled down his take on Murkowski's resolution.
What side are you on? Are you on the side of those who are polluting our area, that the science, best science tells us, is hurting the health of our children and the people of this nation? Are you on the side of the polluters? Or are you on the side of allowing us to do what's right to protect the health of the people of this nation.
Environmental groups kept up their fight against Murkowski, and EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson said in a statement that the resolution disregards the Supreme Court, rejects sound science, and wastes time. But Murkowski says she just wants Congress to take up climate change laws and come up with its own way to regulate emissions. She says that's not denying the science of climate change.
I'd also like to address a rather creative claim that has been made that somehow I'm attempting to gut the Clean Air Act or subvert it into a Dirty Air Act. And I have to admit that when I first saw this, it actually made me laugh because it is so wildly inaccurate.
The resolution needs 51 votes to pass the Senate. Murkowski has 35 Republican co-sponsors and 3 Democrats on board: Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, Louisiana's Mary Landrieu, and Nebraskan Ben Nelson. Alaska Senator Mark Begich says he hasn't yet decided whether to support the measure. Murkowski says she hopes to bring her resolution to a vote soon, but wouldn't be more specific. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Governor Parnell last night delivered his first State of the State address to a joint session of the House and Senate, telling lawmakers the direction in which he wants to take Alaska. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
In his State of the State speech last night, Governor Parnell reviewed the past 6 months, reminding lawmakers of the steps he's taken since his inauguration last summer to improve Alaskan families and economy. But he also said the state has to take control of its own destiny. And that means challenging what he sees as federal encroachment of states' rights, dating back before statehood.
With statehood, the strong presumption prevailed that as a fledgling state, we would be allowed to develop our own resources without constant federal interference. Today, however, the federal government's actions often seem at war with Alaskans' interests.
He promised to fight a federal critical habitat declaration for polar bears, inclusion of the Tongass National Forest in the National Roadless Policy, and federal health care legislation. But most of his speech focused on what he's putting before the legislature for consideration this year. In-state gas development, budget control, new troopers and village public safety officers, a 5-year, $100 million a year plan to provide construction jobs by fixing deteriorating state buildings, and tax incentives for the oil industry.
Companies must invest here in Alaska, create Alaskan jobs, and drill more wells before qualifying for these new tax benefits. I don't support giving tax breaks without an Alaska work commitment.
He gave special emphasis to his plans to control domestic violence and to offer a merit-based university scholarship program.
If we give every high school student the opportunity for a merit scholarship, if we challenge them to reach higher, if we challenge them to take personal responsibility for their futures, many will. These students will transform our economy and positively change the trajectory of Alaska's economy for years to come.
Democrats see a lot of common interests with the governor, such as fighting domestic violence and funding delayed repair work on state buildings. And there are some points on which they feel they can work with him. There are issues, however. Anchorage's Harry Crawford doesn't share the governor's optimism about a natural gas pipeline, and he says the governor can expect strong opposition to some of the oil tax incentives.
Why would we give them a big fat tax break to go into a field where we already know there's oil and we know they're going to drill? So I'm all for new exploration and new development, but I'm not so sure that we need to provide tax breaks for fields that are already in production.
Leaders of the bipartisan Senate majority say they expect to work well with the governor, and they share some of his goals for the year, particularly fiscal restraint, while the state has record-high financial surpluses available. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
One of the top items on the governor's agenda for this year is his merit-based scholarship plan, rewarding students who meet the standards by paying all or part of their university tuition. Besides grade standards, students would have to meet a curriculum minimum of 4 years of courses in math, language, and science, and 3 years of social studies. Rural legislators are questioning the fairness of the plan when some schools in their districts do not even offer all the courses it would be necessary to take. Governor Parnell says the Department of Education checked on that possibility before he announced the plan.
As best we knew at the time, that was not going to be a problem. But notwithstanding that, we thought that that issue might arise, that some schools may not have the curriculum available. And so we have distance learning options as well that are available for all students across the state.
And Commissioner of Education Larry Ledoux says every student will have access to what is needed. He says he is certain of correspondent schools' ability to offer the curriculum, but the legislation also includes an alternative path.
Now, it's not a waiver because it doesn't allow us to waive the expectations, and we don't want to. We need one standard for all. But it does allow if a child has been unable to access and meet the criteria because of something beyond their control. Beyond their control could be not having access because of their geographic location to the courseware, or it could be something in their personal life, a medical condition, that they would have the opportunity to contact the commissioner's office, and we would set up a plan for them to achieve the criteria. And there's lots of different ways to do that.
He says the alternative methods of meeting the standard do not apply only to rural Alaska. He says they could originate with students in urban school districts as well. He says it's necessary to recognize that there is an alternative. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, state officials remove a scientist from a science panel.
The whole idea of me not being acceptable because I'm an advocate doesn't pass the red face test.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years. Working late? Hear Alaska News Nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org.
A shipbuilding company in Wisconsin will begin building a research vessel for the University of Alaska this spring. The contract to build the ice-capable AARV Sikuliak went to Marinette Marine Corporation. The boat is due to be delivered in 2013 and will be homeported in Seward. Along with its ice-breaking capabilities, the 254-foot boat will be equipped with state-of-the-art multi-beam sonar capable of detailed mapping of the ocean floor. In the last few years, mapping by the Coast Guard icebreaker Healy has vastly increased the U.S. potential claim to the seabed under the Arctic Ocean. University of New Hampshire cartographer Larry Mayer, who was the chief scientist on the Healy, says the gear on the Sikuliak will be even better than what he's used.
It'll be fantastic because particularly with the capabilities of this new vessel, we'll be able to see even higher resolution because the system that will be on the new ARRV will be even higher resolution than what I showed. And it should really, I think, open up a whole new world of exploration around Alaska.
Mayer says the sonar technology itself has existed for some time, but scientists now have far better computer power for directing and interpreting it. Yesterday, he gave a presentation at the Marine Science Symposium in Anchorage. APRN's Steve Heimel was there.
Larry Mayer's enthusiasm is contagious. The climate may be warming, but that makes one of the coolest jobs in science even more cool. With the sea ice pulling back, Mayer gets to take his mapping gear out to the remotest parts of the Arctic Ocean.
I've been doing this for 30 years, I love it every minute, particularly when I'm at sea. I really do. And particularly when we have these kind of mapping tools and these visualization tools, I mean, every day is exploration and discovery. It's really exciting.
When I first saw Mayer, he was running what looked like a video game on his laptop, but the landscape we were looking at was real. And so were the giant plumes rising up through it. It was actually imagery of the ocean floor taken off the coast of California this year with the newest multi-beam sonar technology on the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Okeanos Explorer. This is the same technology that will be aboard the University of Alaska's new boat. The plumes were discovered during a test of the equipment. Sonar so sensitive it can see fish or bubbles in the water column three-dimensionally.
In its initial test of the sonar system, they were basically just steaming into port, and the midwater capability was turned on, and suddenly they saw a 1,400-meter-high gas plume. It's really phenomenal. And when they went back a few weeks later, because they had to get into port, they went back to A, see if it was still there, and it was still there, and then continued to map and saw many more of them along a fault line. So it was really, really quite amazing.
Word is just getting out about these methane plumes over the Mendocino fracture zone. Most likely they're coming from fault line activity and not climate warming. Mayer was at the symposium to tell the story of how his scientific crew aboard the Healy realized over a period of years that they were looking at a whole different shape for the continental shelf in the Arctic than the undersea chart showed. The new mapping has probably doubled the amount of seabed floor the U.S. can claim under the Law of the Sea Treaty. Mayer's work began in 2004 when the ice was so thick that the Healy would have to ram it and then back up and ram it again to break through. The scientists were able to take their sonar readings during those brief moments before the vessel went into reverse. As far as they were able to make it, they kept seeing the continental shelf, where the chart said the seafloor should have dropped off. Then, in 2007, when the sea ice dropped back to a record level, they were able to continue and continue for hundreds of miles, and they finally found what is known in the treaty language as the foot of the slope, just 7 degrees from the North Pole itself. Territorially speaking, this shelf is shared with Russia, but the U.S. and Russia already have a treaty that draws the boundary between them. But, also territorially speaking, the U.S. Senate has never ratified the Law of the Sea Treaty, so technically the U.S. can't claim anything. Mayer said the scientists and even the diplomats continue to work together as if the Law of the Sea Treaty were ratified. Government agencies have an extended continental shelf task force, and his mapping data is being tabulated as part of a U.S. territorial claim under the terms of the treaty should it ever be ratified.
I tend to be positive about it because what everybody is doing, every nation is truly following the rule of law, which says you go out and you map, and that's how you build up your criteria for an extended continental shelf. And every country is doing that. So I think it's so far a very positive demonstration of people using the rule of law to further their internal goals.
The revelations from the Healy's cruise of 2007 are likely to keep coming, says Mayer. Geologists are busy analyzing rocks from far out in the Chukchi Sea that show the features of continental origin. At the Marine Science Symposium in Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
State officials have removed a prominent environmental activist from a cruise ship science panel. Gershon Cohen of Haines was one of 9 people named earlier this month to a committee charged with looking at wastewater treatment options. Cohen co-sponsored a 2006 citizen initiative that imposed stringent new standards on the cruise industry. Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Larry Hardig took Cohen off the committee after hearing complaints, some from cruise ship advocates.
This, you know, should be a panel of experts that are independent and can exercise independent judgment, and it would just be hard for somebody that's been for the last 3 or 4 years of their professional career advocating a particular position now being put on what's supposed to be an independent panel that's supposed to go back and revisit these issues strictly from a technological economic perspective.
The committee's first meeting is scheduled for February 1st. The department is calling for additional applicants for the seat representing a non-government organization. Cohen has advanced degrees in biology and environmental policy and served on earlier water quality advisory groups. He says his work on the initiative would make him an asset to the panel, not a liability.
I don't really understand that as a reason, especially when you consider the fact that the cruise ships have a seat on the panel, so they have an advocate. And in fact, the fisheries folks have a person on the panel in a fisheries seat, so they have an advocate. So the whole idea of me not being acceptable because I'm an advocate doesn't pass the red face test.
He says he's concerned the industry is wielding too much power over a panel that will influence pollution control standards. Skagway business owner Steve Heitz was among those upset by Cohen's appointment. He's a founder of the Alaska Alliance for Cruise Travel, a tour business group formed to promote the industry and stop the exodus of ships.
the discussion which we had about this was our surprise that someone who had an absolute agenda was going to be sitting on supposedly a non-biased panel, one that was supposed to have nothing but scientific information being presented from an unbiased position. And that one of the co-sponsors of the cruise ship initiative was not necessarily the unbiased individual that should sit on such a panel.
The science advisory panel was established by legislation pushing back a deadline for new wastewater standards. Its 9 remaining members include international experts in sewage treatment, ship construction, pollution cleanup, and economics. When all seats are filled, the unpaid advisory group will have 11 members. About 10 Alaska lawmakers have joined a new nationwide caucus of coastal state legislators. The caucus was formed to address economic, resource, and environmental issues, as well as respond to the Obama administration's ocean policy initiatives. Lawmakers from about 30 states bordering ocean waters and Great Lakes have joined the group. Juneau Representative Beth Kurtula is one of the main Alaskans involved in the effort.
The big picture is, what do states want to see on a national level? How do we interact? And with Alaska having 5 times the coastline of the rest of the country put together, I think Alaska will play a big part in this.
Alaska has been ahead of many other states in regulating cruise ships. Kurtula says she expects the caucus to address a variety of other state concerns, such as controlling farmed fish, ocean acidification, and ocean pollution. Organizers say President Barack Obama's Ocean Policy Task Force was a catalyst for the group's formation.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
Yukon Quest officials are holding the line on a $150,000 purse while reaching out to the public to cover last-minute operational expenses before next month's race. Alaska Side Race Director Marty Stoury says the Quest has strong in-kind sponsorship of supplies, transportation, and labor, but needs money to cover additional expenses.
Cash to feed people and to buy gas and to pay for snow machine repairs for the people that are putting in the trails. And it's that last part where everything else is coming due and we just need a bit more to make it through.
Stoury says the extra dollars needed right now amount to about 10% of the race's $500,000 budget. The drive to cover race expenses is happening in a more compressed time format this year, as the February 6th Quest start is a week earlier than normal. The move is aimed at allowing more rest time between the Quest and March's Iditarod. The CEO of the Pebble Partnership was joined by a handful of Pebble Mine supporters and opponents in discussing the controversial project during a panel discussion Tuesday night in Dillingham. KDLG's Mike Mason was there and has the story.
The panelists were split into two sides, those who generally trust the existing permitting process for large mines in Alaska and those who generally distrust the process. Greg Anilin sits on the New Haven City Council, and he wants the process to proceed in the hope of using the Pebble Mine to foster economic development and the creation of more jobs for the villages in the Iliamna Lake area.
Right now, we don't have any. We used to have the fish that used to go up. We used to have 6 million to 15 million escapement up the Quijack. We only are offered 2 million now by the Fish and Game. So that industry is done. And so our economy has kind of collapsed, and there's no other economy, nobody coming into our area, so we don't have any private monies coming in. The Pebble Project has put a little hope and development in that area and providing work for the people.
Another of the participants in Tuesday night's forum was longtime state senator Rick Halford, who left the legislature in 2002. He now works part-time as a consultant for Trout Unlimited. He said development of the Pebble deposit would be one of the greatest disasters in the history of Alaska.
Opposition to the Pebble mine is probably the most important thing that you, the true stakeholders in the back of the room, because you're the ones that have got to deal with this. You're the ones, many of us will be long gone, but you will be here and you will need to deal with this. Congratulations for taking a stand, being involved. This is the greatest issue of your lifetime.
The lone representative of the Pebble Partnership to attend the forum was CEO John Shively, who stressed over and over that there is no mining plan, and he repeatedly asked for patience from the residents of the region as that plan is prepared. In his final statement of the evening, Shively said there are still many unanswered questions that must be answered before the partnership decides to move forward with the development of the Pebble deposit.
Pebble may or may not be a partial answer to the questions of the economic problems out here. I don't know that. I don't know that we have a project that works. I am not convinced of that. I'm not convinced yet that we have a project that environmentally works, and I'm not convinced that we have a project that economically works. But I'm going to take the time and whatever time it takes to figure out if we do, to get the answer to that question and get the right answer.
One of the surprising bits of information put forward by Shively during Tuesday night's discussion was that the Pebble Partnership will not be submitting permit applications for the Pebble Mine in 2010. That's a change from earlier statements by some in the management structure for the partnership that they would be filing for permits later this year. Perhaps the most passionate testimony Tuesday night came from Tom Tilden, the tribal chief of the Chogyang tribe in Dillingham. He claimed that opponents of the Pebble Mine are playing against a stacked deck.
And when I say that, all I have to do is look at the top officials that are going to be issuing these permits and their backgrounds. And where did they come from? Industry. Do they come from subsistence or fishing industry? No. Mining industry.
The Pebble Partnership, which is exploring developing the Pebble deposit, was created in 2007, and it's a 50-50 partnership between Northern Dynasty Minerals and the mining giant Anglo American. Despite the widespread opposition to the mine in the Bristol Bay region, there are some very large and influential corporations invested in the partnership and ultimately in the mine. For instance, the mining giant Rio Tinto invested about $200 million by buying about 20% of Northern Dynasty shares, and the Mitsubishi Corporation has an 11% stake in Northern Dynasty. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Former telecommunications executive Republican Sheldon Fisher said today he will challenge Representative Don Young, Alaska's sole representative in the U.S. House, in the 2010 primary election. Fisher has a law degree from Yale Law School and a degree from Brigham Young University. Young is seeking his 20th term. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Mike Mason in Dillingham. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson from Juneau, and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron and Kristen Spack, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you file your PFD online, your donation through Pick, Click, and Give can make a huge difference in the lives of Alaskans. Your contribution can lend a hand to Alaskans worried about their next meal or help children who suffer abuse and neglect. Your generosity can help provide shelter for a homeless Alaskan whose average age is just 9 years old. Go to pickclickgive.org and select your favorite cause and be the person who sets it all in motion. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.